Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. We're happy to have y'all here. We're going to be talking about whatever you want to on today's show. Trades, free agency, the other moves the Lakers need to make as they get ready for the season. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. All right. I'm Trevor Lane. He's Jovan Buha, Pete Zayas. Guys, how are we doing?
Doing well. I'm a Florida man now, guys. Getting ready. Got my lighting showing up tomorrow. Been hauling up three flights of stairs in the August heat. So, you know, lost a little weight this week. Feeling pretty good. How you doing, Jovan?
I'm doing well. Getting prepared for my vacation. Going to be gone for the next few weeks. Missing some shows, unfortunately. I will miss you guys, but I will make do over in Europe.
I'm sure somehow you're going to get by. Are going to go down to one day a week starting next week. Yeah, Jovan is going to be traipsing around Europe. He's going to be having a good time there. Pete and I will hold things down for a few weeks.
Appreciate you guys.
Jovan, maybe we'll have to, if anything big happens, maybe we'll have to we'll bring you in. You can be out somewhere beautiful in Europe and you just pop in on your phone or something like that.
Are you going to be in Slovenia at any point by any chance? Are you going to do some on the ground reporting for the Luka camp?
No, but I will be in Serbia, which is right next to Slovenia during the, while they're out there. So maybe I'll have to pop on over.
That would be a lot of fun. Go check in on camp, see how everything is going. You know, they've got an open spot. Cameron Carr's reportedly not going. So there you go. Just fill that spot, hop in. You'll be ready to roll.
Let's do it.
All right, guys. Everybody joining in the chat, we're going to be taking your questions, your comments on the show. We thought, you know what? Let's do a show that's just dedicated to you guys. Whatever you guys want us to talk about, throw us your questions, your comments. We'll dive into all of it. Of course, the Lakers right now in a spot where the roster not only is full, it's overfilled in that they've got somebody will have to be cut or they'll have to make some type of a trade. But we also know this roster is probably incomplete. Even with 16 out of 15 roster spots filled, they still need to find that starting level wing, perhaps a reserve big. We've talked all about that. But give us your thoughts on the team right now. I've got people in the chat mentioning Arthur Kaluma. Are we overlooking him when we're having our wing conversations, or are we right, Pete, to focus on the guys that have guaranteed contracts rather than include the two-way players?
Yeah, I think that he'd have to earn that, and it's difficult to kind of bump somebody out of one of those guaranteed deals. Now, as you said in the intro, that, you know, the roster is incomplete and there may be moves to be made, but my philosophy is guys like that will get a lot of run during training camp, during preseason games, and they need to kind of kick the door down. But he's under team control. If he's good, the cream will rise to the top, you know? And so I don't really foresee him being like a part of the rotation, but if he's good enough, he'll show that.
Jovan, what does Arthur Kaluma have to do in order to get into the mix?
I think shoot the ball at a certain level, because we just had this discussion yesterday on my show talking through several of the options for the fifth starter battle. And if you compare Kaluma to Zaire Williams and Jake LaRavia, Mamu and Matisse Thybulle, with the exception of Mamu, who a totally different conversation just because of the defense and some of the foot speed there. If you compare him to the other three guys, Zaire, Jake and Matisse, I think the one clear advantage he could potentially have over those guys is shooting the ball at a certain level, being a high volume threat from deep, and then also bringing a certain level of defense that, like, maybe Matisse is better or Jake is better. Zaire, like, he could be the technically the worst of the four defensively, but if he's shooting 38% on like 6 or 7 attempts per 36 minutes, that could be a valuable piece for and you give him an edge over those three, because Matisse is a low volume 3-point shooter and Jake and Zaire, their shots can be a bit up and down. So I think that's the one area. Like, of course, he's got to bring it with the rebounding, with the defense, with the motor. But assuming he does that, which we saw elements of that in Summer League, if he shoots the ball at 38, 39, 40%, that to me could be a difference maker.
Yeah, to that point, Trev, like, Lakers don't really have a player like him on the wing, do they?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. They don't really have a player that shoots the way that he can. Every guy that we talk about on the wing, the question mark is shooting, whether that's even Jared Vanderbilt. But we talk about Jake LaRavia, talk about Zaire Williams. The question is, will the three-point shot be there? And that would even be true if they were to sign, say, Jonathan Kuminga, perhaps even PJ Washington, given the way that he shot the ball last year, though I think that has more to do with the Mavs and their ability to create three-point looks based on the way the roster was last year than PJ Washington not being a good shooter. But I think you're going to have all these question mark guys. If he can come in and be not that, it'd be somebody that is well above league average from three, that could be really helpful. You know, Arthur Kaluma told us out at Summer League that one of the things he's specifically been working on is his foot speed. And that, I think he's trying to shed that label of being a small forward sized power forward. Essentially, he's too slow to play the three, not quite big enough to play the four, and he's trying to make sure that he can get that sort of label off of him. And the shooting is going to be, I think, the big thing that he's going to be able to provide. It's, can he be good enough in those other areas? Can he be good enough defending on the wing, on the perimeter? Can he be helping you on the glass? We saw a lot of things we liked in Summer League, but Jovan, I keep coming back to, I'm just glad that they're, if you're going to invest in a player, I'm glad we're seeing them take risks on the wing and trying to find those. Because to me, if you find a wing that you can plug into your lineup, most of these guys are not going to hit, but if you find somebody that can, it is, I think, more valuable than if you find, say, a combo guard that hits or something like that. So I like that the Lakers are rolling the dice, taking a risk here on a wing player like Arthur Kaluma, even if it's a low hit rate with the two-way.
We've discussed the tight end by committee approach that the Lakers are taking at, you know, on the wing. And to your point, not every guy is going to hit. It would be unrealistic to assume that all these guys are going to be starting level or rotation level players. But as long as you get two or three of those guys, and even if they all kind of play to their average level, just having more depth there, because that's the other thing, is like, can Matisse Thybulle make it through an 82 game season? Jake was an Iron Man last year, but these guys are going to naturally pick up injuries throughout the course of the season, and having the depth now, I think, to replace them in like similar level players, that to me is one of the alluring things with this roster. Is I just think there's a level of depth that the Lakers have not had in several seasons.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's something that can be really useful for a team, especially given the way the injury bug hit, not just the Lakers, but the NBA last season. Depth has become more important now than ever before. Let's see. Got a question coming in here from Sebastian, who said, Trevor, do you think the holdup is finding a third team since Atlanta is $4 million under the first apron? So in terms of getting a deal done with Jonathan Kuminga, I mean, Pete, it sounded like most of the conversation, the holdup with Kuminga has more been Jonathan Kuminga wanting more money than what the Lakers have to or are willing to offer. Perhaps the fact that the Lakers would need to do a three-year deal is not attractive to Jonathan Kuminga, who may want to get back out onto the market sooner rather than later. The sense has not been that it's the need of a third team. Is there a world that, do you think a third team is a necessity?
I don't think it's a necessity. And to address the concern that they're pointing out there, remember the Lakers can take some money back too. So there's like, I brought up Buddy Hield the last episode that I was on as a possible guy the Lakers could take back, where it could be like Vando and Dalton for Buddy and Kuminga type of thing, where you are alleviating some of Atlanta's cap issues, not all the way, right? And if they're taking on Vando, right, that adds a little bit of salary there, but it's not like an either or type of thing where the only way to resolve some of the money issues there is to find that third team. And whenever you find a third team, they're going to want to be compensated too. It's like, okay, you want us involved. We want at least a second round pick out of this. And that doesn't even account for what you'd be sending to Atlanta. So one of the ways the Lakers can help Atlanta is to take some of their money back.
That's certainly something that, and we know the Lakers have been connected to Buddy Hield in the past. That's certainly something that can be a path that the Lakers can attempt to go down here. But does Jonathan Kuminga want to be a Laker? I think that's the big question. If he does, I think there'll be a path to making that happen. Hopefully we see something come to fruition here, as they definitely need to add that starting level wing. And Kuminga, I think, certainly can be that. Jovan, when we're looking at this stuff with potential wing targets, whether it's PJ Washington, whether it's Jonathan Kuminga, how critical is it that Vando goes out in the deal in terms of trying to not only add a piece right now, but also hit the home run in that you add your starting level wing now, but also have your non-taxpayer mid-level exception available next summer?
I mean, I think it's critical. I just don't think it's going to happen. I mean, it would be great to get off of Vando's contract, but the Lakers have been trying to get off Vando's contract for a bit and have been unable to find a suitor for it or figure out the proper price to get off of his contract. So it would be great, and that will be a key for next summer in terms of accessing that non-taxpayer MLE if the Lakers do end up adding the Kuminga PJ type, to your point. But I think that might be a problem for the trade deadline or for next summer rather than now, because I just don't see who's going to want to take on that contract realistically. And the Lakers having enough assets to both acquire the Kuminga or Washington and also offset the cost of putting in Vando. Like, really, the way we've discussed multiple times is if you take back a bad contract, like if you take back worse money or equally bad money, okay, maybe then you could offset Vando and not attach something. If it's like a value contract that you're getting back, you're going to have, and especially if you're trying to reroute him somewhere else, you're going to have to attach draft capital that the Lakers just don't have.
So then what would be the pieces going out? And if it's not Vando, who goes? Would Jaden Hardy, Jake LaRavia?
Hardy and Dalton. Maybe Jake, but some form of the expiring money.
Yeah. Pete, Jovan and I were talking about this yesterday on his show. Is Dalton the odd man out when the Lakers need to cut their roster down to 15?
I think almost certainly. Yeah. I think that's almost certainly the case that he's going to be that guy. I am wondering about the timeline on this. Like, is this what the off seasons are going to be like now? Cause it's not just the Kuminga situation. It's we've got Peyton Watson, Jalen Duren, Mathurin. There's so many things sort of up in the air that you bring it back to somebody like Dalton. Think of how many players around the NBA, their future is uncertain and sort of up in the air right at this moment, precisely because all of these other things need to happen first. That I just I'm almost disoriented by the new pace of the offseason. And like, is this the new normal?
Yeah, what was it? Bobby Marks had something on more players have changed teams via trade this summer than free agency. It's certainly become the weakest of the three paths, I think, to build out a roster. When we talk about trades, the draft, and free agency, it's just not what it was. I mean, Jovan, it wasn't that long ago that we were covering, you know, it was Carmelo Anthony's recruitment tour, right? And he's going to these different cities and banners are being hung with the player in the team's jersey and all that kind of stuff. That's just, that world feels so far away right now when we look at the current state of NBA free agency.
I would take it even a step back with the current landscape and say, I think this stems from the Kawhi situation and the Kawhi situation now holding things up, because you mentioned a couple names there. Peyton Watson and Benedict Mathurin are both tied to the Clippers right now, because the Clippers are one of the suitors for Peyton Watson that could actually afford to trade for him and fit him into their cap sheet and also have a potential first round pick to send out to Denver, which right now they've been unable to land a first in a potential sign and trade with Watson. So the Kawhi situation and the resolution, like this aspiration thing, is going on almost a year now. And until that is resolved, which that might not be resolved for, you know, into the fall, into the season, that's holding things up, because the natural way that this was going to play out was, you know, Kawhi goes to Toronto, the trade goes through, and then the Clippers were going to try and get Peyton Watson. And if they weren't able to get Peyton Watson, they're going to look toward either retaining Benedict Mathurin or potentially acquiring Jonathan Kuminga. And so there's this ripple effect right now. And looking at Kuminga specifically, he's behind Peyton Watson in the general pecking order. So with teams like the Clippers, teams like the Bucks that could potentially acquire Peyton Watson, if they don't land Peyton Watson, then they turn their attention to Jonathan Kuminga. And so if you're Kuminga, you have to be blown away by an offer right now, I think, to offset or look past what could be a more lucrative deal later in the summer, depending on how things play out after the Kawhi situation. So I've been saying, I think the Kawhi situation is actually holding all this up, because once that's resolved, I think there could be more of a market for Watson, Kuminga, et cetera.
You know, the frustrating part of all that is it doesn't feel like the Kawhi situation is anywhere close to being resolved right now. It seems like that's just going to keep on going. In fact, there's talk about it. It could go into 2027. Essentially, if there's any kind of punishment for Steve Ballmer or the Clippers, they're going to kick and scream and fight. And that's going to lead to a prolonged battle here. And the players, if Kawhi gets punished, then the Players Association is getting, the only way this ends quickly is if the NBA says, nope, you guys did nothing wrong, everything is fine. Then nobody's going to contest that. and then that would come to a conclusion. But if the Kawhi situation is holding everything up, when we talk about Peyton Watson, we talk about Jonathan Kuminga, and it's all kind of being stopped by the fallen tree that is the Kawhi Leonard aspiration scandal, what could end up being a final straw or a final point of inflection here is October 1st, which is when the qualifying offers will expire. That's the threat right now for, say, Peyton Watson. He can say, hey, I am going to take the qualifying offer. If you guys don't sign and trade me somewhere, you're going to lose me for nothing next summer, in his conversations with the Denver Nuggets. That can be extended, those qualifying offers. If the team and the player agree, they can extend that. But there is a finite amount of time. And I do think it's more likely than not that the Kawhi situation will not be resolved by the time push comes to shove, and Peyton Watson, the Denver Nuggets, they've got to make a decision. Jonathan Kuminga has got to make a decision.
Well, they have to agree to the punishment. So,
you right, know, exactly. What the hell is that, man?
Must be nice to be freaking.
Could you imagine? You were growing up. Your parents ground you, and you say, "Well, no, I don't agree.
I don't know.
Come on, I don't agree to these terms."
Yeah.
Oh, what it means to be a billionaire? Absolutely crazy. All right, let's. We got a super chat here to get into. Who do you guys think will have a better season, the Lakers or the 76ers? Can you see Adu forge a run or test game defensively? James Harden better watch out if he does. So, Pete, are we going to be stuck in hell of every time the 76ers do something good or the Lakers do something bad or vice versa? We're going to be comparing the two teams.
So that's absolutely going to happen. You've already seen sort of a yes.
It's already happening.
Yes. That's like the dynamic of like comparing everything from the Lakers and Sixers is going to be something that we see all year long. There's also been like pretty notable shift in some, I'd say, LeBron friendly media in terms of how they perceive the Lakers and how they talk about the Lakers. That's going to be a thing every time the Lakers lose a game or, God forbid, two in a row at some point. It's going to be that. But I actually think the Lakers, I think the regular season will be more difficult for the Sixers than it will be for the Lakers, in part due to the depth issues. I think that the Sixers obviously have a higher ceiling this year, but after that first five, I think that it gets a little bit rough on them. And if any of them are missing time, you know, players are going to be stepping into roles that they're, for one, not used to or not quite good enough to fill that spot. And then you've got the dynamic of a lot of players on that team need touches, want touches, and I think that they can resolve that, but it is going to take reps and time to figure all that out. And so you throw that on top of kind of some injury issues with Embiid, and I wouldn't assume that the regular season is going to be smooth in Philly.
Kevin Durant says the 76ers are the best team ever, since even better than his Warriors when he joined his 73-9 team.
That had also won a championship.
That had also won a championship.
And had arguably, I mean, at least back-to-back MVP on the team, right? I mean,
KD's trying to take a little bit of the heat off of himself there. He got a lot of flack for joining that Warriors team. Yoel, what do you think, though? How do the Lakers stack up with the 76ers?
So I think in the regular season, I would bet on the Lakers being ahead of the Sixers. Now, I think the Sixers have an element of last year's Lakers team where the Lakers, I mean, remember, like their statistical profile last year was that of a team like barely above 500, and they won a ton of close games with their stars taking over in the clutch. They had this margin for error where whether they had injuries to the rotation or injuries to the stars themselves, they were able to combat that with just their sheer talent and brilliance of the top of the roster. So I do think the Sixers have some margin for error with that collection of, even if Embiid misses some time or LeBron misses some time, they have those three guys on the perimeter that can assume that usage and put the team on their back, so to speak, to a degree. It obviously matters more in the playoffs whether LeBron and Embiid are available, but I think they have like a margin for error. That said, I think to me, it's honestly more so how brutal the East is going to be. And you have 11 legit teams vying for 10 postseason spots. And I just think it's going to be a nightly bloodbath of just the caliber of opponent that you're going to be playing in the East. It has swung, in my opinion, to where I still like the top of the West better than the top of the East, but the depth in the East, to me, it, you know, right now it's deeper than the West. So in the regular season, I like the Lakers better than the Sixers. I think if we're saying like pure ceiling, pure upside, I would give the Sixers the edge currently of like that five-man unit. I think it's just better than the Lakers' best five-man unit as constructed. But if the Lakers go get PJ Washington or Jonathan Kuminga and Kuminga hits, then I think it's a different conversation.
At the Eastern Conference, no more. The East is certainly getting much, much better. First of all, the silver lining was LeBron at least went East, even if he was not going to be a Laker. We are seeing the talent start to balance out a little bit more, which is certainly needed for so long. It's been everybody's just been nonstop coming to the Western Conference. Definitely hurt the conference that Wemby and Cooper Flagg both wound up in the West. Hopefully we'll continue to see more talent head to the Eastern Conference and balance things out a bit. But look, the 76ers are going to be very, very good. I think everybody's expecting them to be great right out of the gate, and I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the case. I think they are going to have to work through some things and figure out roles and all of that, but there is a lot of potential there and upside. Now, the second part of this, Adu Thiro, a Ron Artest-like game defensively. I mean, I would love it. Adu has so much room for growth, though. I have a hard time pinning down exactly what he ultimately will be, because he's got so much to learn on both sides of the ball. He's so athletically gifted. But, Pete, it's almost like I don't want to try to project too much of what Adu Thiro is going to become, because there's so many different directions that this can ultimately go, depending on his shot, depending on how he's making reads out on the floor, all the different things that he's really got to refine about his game.
Absolutely. Although I do see where this listener is coming from in terms of the comp to Ron Artest and in that really physically strong but attacking. Like, Artest had some of the best hands I've ever seen on the defensive end, and just very strong and able to absorb that contact. But it not in that like passive, I'm guarding you and just trying to keep you in front. Like, Adu can really attack defenders. I think he led the league in per 36 like deflections right now. He barely played last year. He played like 20 games in the regular season, but it speaks to the degree of defensive playmaking that he can have. But Artest had way more polish. Obviously, he came out of St. John's and played a little more college ball than Adu did. Also, and Adu had a big old growth spurt. One of these days, go on YouTube and look up his freshman year highlights from Kentucky, when he was at Kentucky. You'd be like, that's the same guy? He was like 6'4", 6'5". So I think there is sort of a, and you see this in some of the balance and awkwardness of his game, if like figuring out his new tools and like how big he is. And he hasn't been like this size his whole life. And so, I think, but I do see the comp there, that like very aggressive attacking playmaking that fits right in, Jovan, with Zaire and Matisse and all of that. When you get multiple guys like that, if Vando comes back, you can really create an overall effect that's sort of greater than the sum of its parts.
I see the comp. I want to be careful with just, to me, Artest is one of the best perimeter defenders ever. Yeah. And I think there is an element of like his footwork and tracking guys on the ball, I think, is just at a different level than Adu. Not saying Adu can't get there, but I think Artest was at a different level at this stage of his career in terms of the defender he was. But I see the similarity. Like, I think maybe OG and Anobi, that comparison has been thrown out with Adu. I see a little bit more of like being that level of defender as like a realistic upside rather than Artest, who's defensive player of the year, one of the defensive goats. But I see like there's definitely a frame and profile similarity between the two.
Yeah, Pete, I think it's so interesting that you mentioned the growth spurt for Adu. It puts it all into context, what we're seeing out of him in terms of him getting out of control. And the instant thing I thought of was Steve Rogers was Captain America when he first gets the super soldier serum, and he runs out onto the street chasing the bad guy, and like he can't control his legs and he goes crashing through the storefront window and all of that. That's kind of Adu Thiro. It makes sense. He's just trying to grow into his body right now, and hopefully that control will improve, because that's the other, like, physically, both guys are very, very strong. We talk about MWP and we talk about Adu Thiro. Both guys are very strong, but Adu doesn't use that strength the same way MWP did, but it took a while for him to get there and grow into the defensive player that he was. I'll tell you this, if Adu Thiro gets there, the Lakers are going to be very, very, very happy that they drafted him, because that would be a hell of a defensive player. Is there a world, guys, that you think Adu Thiro, maybe not out of the gate, but by midseason, could be fighting for that starting job? Or is he still 2 years away, the proverbial 2 years away from being 2 years away or what have you?
I don't think it's 2 years away from being 2 years away. I think there is absolutely a world. Like, if I think that world is one where we don't get a Kuminga or PJ Washington or that like legit starter, mm-hmm. but he's got so much talent is not a dude's issue, you know, and there's a matter of reps and I think film work and just staying healthy that like he is incredibly talented. He fits the style that I think we want to play defensively. And remember over summer league, Jovan Redick, that's what he told them. We need that point of attack defense. We need you to get your minutes can be earned on the defensive end of the floor. So if he can defend and just do what he does naturally, running the floor, diving from the corner, have some level of competency as a three-point shooter, but as you were saying earlier, it's not like he's got a ton of competition in that respect, that he's absolutely the best athlete of all of them. So there's some opportunity available where, like, I don't think that's even the median outcome, but is there a world? Heck yeah, there is.
I think another part of this will be Walker Kessler's shot, because if Walker Kessler is a legitimate shooter and pick and pop big and catch and shoot big, then I think you have more utility for a guy like Adu. If Kessler's shot is shaky or just that was a, you know, just an outlier performance last season, then I think it gets a little bit more complicated with just having two non-shooters in that starting group. And we know for JJ, that's almost a non-starter. So I think Adu's continued development and his polish on the offensive side, coupled with Kessler's offensive game and his ability to potentially space out, I think those are the two factors that would play in. But certainly we're talking about a couple minimum guys in Zaire and Matisse, a guy barely above the minimum in Jake. And then Mamu, from a talent perspective, I think is clearly the best of these guys. There's just a defensive limitation with him, Luka, and Kessler together. Yeah, I mean, I think it's open for Adu to potentially take that spot, you know, assuming that he continues to progress as anticipated.
All right, we've got a hypothetical trade next that we're going to get to here. First, a quick shout out to our sponsor. That is Prize Picks. You guys can check them out. Use the link in the description down below. The code, it's HMA. Play $5, get $150 if you win for new users. Great new promo with Prize Picks. Never a better time to go check them out than right now. All you got to do is pick more or less on some of your favorite players. Right now, MLB season in full swing. I went more than 4.5 strikeouts for Christopher Sanchez. I'm going to roll with that one. Let's see what else we can find here on the fly. I always like the strikeout. Let's go. Ooh, you can even go mid-game here. 6 strikeouts right now. Got to get to 7.5. More than that, Nolan McClain. Let's roll with it. We'll give that one a try. You guys want to get in on it, use that code HMA. Play $5. Get $150 if you win. And again, the link is in the description down below. Big thank you to Prize Picks for sponsoring the show. All right. Let's go here. Jonathan Kuminga and Carlo Matkovich coming in. Out Vando, Dalton Connect, Jaden Hardy, all the picks. Are you doing that? Getting Matkovich and Kuminga, but you're giving up the pick swap, 3 second round picks, and you're moving off of Jared Vanderbilt's contract.
Why am I on the roster?
Are you on the right?
You are. You're second to last to Looney. Yeah,
there he is.
Well, I'm the Jake replacement, I guess.
Yeah, you know, no one will notice. Like you can play you just the blend five, right bro. In. Yeah.
Man, I'm more than the 14th man. Come on now.
Who are you slotting in front of? You're slotting in front of Looney. Who else?
I guess okay. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I would do this in a heartbeat personally, because you're getting off Vando and yes, you're emptying the clip from a draft asset standpoint, standpoint, but you're getting JK, you're getting Carlo. And then I assume JK is going to cost, it depends on the framework of the trade, but I assume it's going to cost at least one asset, if not potentially two. Mm-hmm. Then Carlo, you're not just getting him for free. So you're gonna have to send out, you know, a second or whatever for him. Then if the final asset is what gets you off of Vando's contract, if it really just takes one thing, like I would do that, whether it's a second or a swap. So I would do this.
I'm a little more optimistic than you are about the Lakers' ability to get off of Vando's contract without giving up everything, including getting while getting Kuminga back. So I wouldn't want to give up everything to just have Kuminga be the best player that that gets back. And that's one of the things that, we'd get back. Cause, and that's one of the things, Trevor, is that a lot of times when we think about these types of trades, it's like, yeah, that looks fairly equitable on paper, but you got to like write it out and then be like, okay, well, what do we have? What's the next move that we need to make? We still need a backup five. Right. Yeah. And how do you get that if you don't have any assets available? So I'm a little more bullish on the Lakers' ability to get off of Vando without having to give up everything. And so because of that, I'd say no. How about you?
You know, I'm torn on this. I like Maksimovic a lot. I think that he's a really interesting piece that you could add. In addition to Jonathan Kuminga, I want to know what the Kuminga contract would ultimately look like. I think if it's this, you got to give up all your picks, but you're moving off of Vando. It's tough. I'd prefer to not have to give up that swap, and you probably do, but just in order to be able to make one more move if you need to, I think you're gonna need some type of draft capital. So I'd be trying not to include everything to get Jonathan Kuminga. If you told me they're getting Peyton Watson, if you told me even if they're getting PJ Washington, I'd be willing to give up a little bit more than if it were just for Jonathan Kuminga. I don't think I want to touch the pick swap in a Jonathan Kuminga deal, period. It does help with Vando going out, but I just think they need to be careful to add one more move to the mix, whether it's for this season or perhaps for next summer, having the ability to have a few more assets to play with. That would be important. So I'd be trying to negotiate the swap or at least one of the seconds or something out of this deal as I can, because there's a question mark with Jonathan Kuminga. We don't know for sure that he is the guy that's going to be the long-term fit for the Lakers. There may be belief there, but it's not the same as PJ Washington, where we know what he is and what he can be with Luka Doncic. He is still very much a theoretical player. So I don't know that I want to give up everything to get a player that I think maybe can pan out, but I don't know it with any kind of real certainty. So that's where I'm at with that. I do think this balances out the roster. And I also think the pieces that we haven't talked about that helps a bit here is it also solves your roster crunch problem by sending out three players, taking back two. So you're really taking care of a lot of your shopping right here. You're adding a wing, you're adding a big-ish player in Maksimovic, then you're also clearing out your roster and cutting yourself down to 15. There's a lot to like about this. I would just be trying to negotiate out one of those pieces there, whether it's a swap or a second.
No, that's fair. I mean, Pete, I'm curious. You wouldn't view Carlo as the backup five in this case, because that's how I would view it.
So I don't like Carlo and Mamu together. They're too similar, right?
Fair.
And when you were bringing up the point about Kessler's jumper in relation to Adu, you know, Adu's likelier to play off of the bench. And I think that Adu and Mamu, if both hit, like, I would want Adu to be the type of four that plays next to Mamu, and I'd want Mamu to be the type of four that plays next to Adu. But if you've got two, they're too similar to me, and I think they're too weak defensively between the two of them to be a good fit.
That's fair. But yeah, I mean, to Trevor's point, I like getting off. You clear the roster spot, and you're doing your homework early in terms of getting off of Vando now versus next summer, because you're going to have to get off of him at some point, and you're going to have to attach something at some point. So I guess, sure, if you could keep the swap out, that would be amazing. But I think you're going to have to give up something to get off of him.
Let's go to this one. Said, last year, Luka took only 7.6% of his shot attempts from within 3 feet of the basket, and 48% of his shot attempts were threes. I hope that ratio changes. And conversely, I hope Austin takes more pull-up threes. You know, that's one thing that, particularly if Walker Kessler is able to shoot the three, but also just with the makeup of this roster in general, I do think there's going to be more opportunities, and we've talked about how good this offense can be, to put teams in the blender and then open up passing lanes after multiple driving kicks. Or I'm sorry, driving lanes after multiple driving kicks, where perhaps that opens things up a bit for Luka to get to the basket, do some more finishing in the paint, things of that nature. He does love that step back three. I think there was a point, Jovan, where you, myself, and Jason, we had the conversation that maybe he needed to cut out one or two of his step-back three attempts per game when he was struggling before he went on a heater post-All-Star break. I think it was January where his numbers weren't looking great there, and we talked about maybe dialing that back just a little bit. I would agree, though. I'd like to see Luka in the paint a bit more, some more shots at the rim, if you can get it, of course. I just think the great thing about Luka is no matter what the defense gives him, he's going to find a decent look. Paint touches, though, I think are going to be at a premium on this Lakers team, and I'm expecting to see more of them this coming season, given the makeup of this roster offensively.
Yeah, this is something that, so I do a series after every season and then going into every season where I look at like one thing I think each player on the Lakers needs to improve on. And this was my thing for Luka, was just the shot diet shifting a little bit toward closer to the rim, closer to the paint, just because he's such a good finisher. He's also coming off, I believe he shot a career high at the rim this past season. So I will say that this rate to me is a little deflated because it doesn't factor in foul drawing and mm-hmm. free throw attempts. And so Luka does draw fouls on his drives into the paint and with the head fakes and the post game. And so some of this I think is not reflective of how often he actually is getting to the rim or getting into the paint. But certainly I think it can be tilted a little bit more. And to your point about what we discussed early in the season, I think it's as simple as like, I mean, it's tough because Luka can be 1 for 9 and then go bury 3 straight 3s. So it's like, there's just always that volcano waiting to erupt with his shot. But I think there were some nights where it was like, okay, you're 2 for 11 tonight. Maybe, you know, try to get to the free throw line or try to get to the rim, get into a rhythm, and then you know, take the step back threes. And some of those nights, I just felt he was settling a little bit too much. So that would be for me, like the calculation of, if he's making them, like take 23s, right? Like he's that type of shooter where when he's on, he's on. And even when he's off, he can turn on at any point. It's just, I think there can be a little bit of a better balance. And so I would like to see this number be maybe closer to like 15-ish%. If that, you know, it was possible, you know, 12 to 15, I would say.
Yeah, that'd be almost doubling, you know, what he did last year. Mm-hmm. I think more opportunities are going to be available as a function of different style of offense and different personnel. I think the Lakers will be much more capable of going five out and not just playing out of a five out formation, but having five players on the floor at any given time that you have to respect their jump shot. I think we're going to do a lot more screen away and handoff type of stuff and a lot less horns action. That was more conducive to LeBron at the elbow, you know, great facilitator from there. But think about that from if you're a driver off of the dribble, you've got two bodies at the elbows. You don't have dribble penetration opportunities out of horn sets. And I think you're going to see the floor space just in a different way than it has been before. And knock on wood that Kessler's jump shot is real and that he's able to knock those down. You've got Mamu coming off of the bench that I think that there's going to be a natural increase for both Luka and Austin in terms of their ability to get to the rack, just as a function of like of running different style of offense.
I just pulled the numbers. Luka last season was shooting in terms of shot frequency, 19th percentile in shots at the rim relative to his position, but 95th percentile in his finishing percentage at the rim. So obviously we'd like to see that number go up a bit in terms of frequency, given how absolutely amazing he is there. One of the things that I've been kicking around though, guys, that is related to this, what pace do you guys expect to see the Lakers play at? I mean, they lost LeBron, who was probably their biggest fast break engine, his ability to grab and go. But I think overall athletically, the team improved over the summer. So what are we expecting to see? Are we expecting to see a lot of fast break? Luka likes to play in the half court. You don't have LeBron's grab and go ability, yet you got more athletic. Jovan, I'll start with you. What are you expecting to see out of this team from a pace perspective? And should we be expecting an increase in fast breaks, more half court? Where does this go?
It's tricky because to your point, I think Luka and Austin are more half court practitioners. Right. Austin can get out in transition and start the break, but I don't think that's necessarily how he wants to play all the time. But adding in guys like Rhymes and Sexton, I think give you a real downhill ability, a real verve. And I could see it maybe increasing a little bit. That's to say nothing of adding in guys like Adu and Zaire who can run the break, run the wings. I think that there's more overall youth and speed and athleticism. And I could definitely see some of those bench groups if we're thinking through, okay, Mamu and Adu, like that's my favorite pairing right now, 4-5 bench combo with Sexton out there and then potentially even Austin. Now you're getting a little shaky defensively, but those groups could just be playing at hyper speed. And that would be a really fun, you know, even throw Cameron Carr in there. And then all of a sudden he's another one who can run the break. Like all of a sudden you have a pretty quick, dynamic offensive group. So I think there will be some units that play way faster than last year's group. I do think LeBron was a one-man fast break. I mean, he's arguably the best transition player of all time or in that conversation. So it's like, all right, they're going to miss that even with him at age 41. But I'll say they nudge up a little bit in pace. I'm trying to pull it up here. Where did they finish last year?
So I just pulled the number. They finished last year in terms of fast break points scored. They finished last year middle of the pack, 15th. In fast break points scored last season.
And they're 22nd in pace. Yeah, so right. that I'll say maybe they're in like the 16 to 18 range. I think they nudge up a bit, but Luka has tended to prefer to play slower. So I think that'll be at the heart of the offense.
Yeah, LeBron's kind of paradoxical from a pace standpoint in that he's always one of the elite individual scorers from a fast break perspective, but he's never really been a guy that's been part of teams that are top five, top 10 pace wise. Like, he's somebody that he understands at the beginning of the play, like, oh, if I run here, I'm going to score. Like, there's a great scoring opportunity here, but it's not like he's going to run the floor on every single possession. He knows when those opportunities are there or not. But guys, these are a bunch of dudes that are under 30 now. Like, that's what this team should be. They should be able to get out and run. And one of the things I'm excited about, you brought up Mamu, Jovan, is Mamu's a really good grab and go guy. He'll get rebounds and he doesn't need to outlet it to a guard or anything like that. He can just get going. And then when you add the rookie in there, Carr in a do on the wing, Zaire can do this. Grimes can really do this. Sexton can push the pace. That I think collectively, one of the things the Lakers were really missing, Trev, was their sideline break concepts, like the really filling the wing and attacking. And it's like somewhere in between an actual fast break and a half court set. It's not really either of those things. Back in the day, we'd call them secondary breaks. And it's those kind of opportunities that happen in early offense, but aren't true fast breaks, that I think that's going to go way up for this Lakers team. And part of that is having a guy like Mamu who can grab and go, but also just more guys who like to run the floor that are in their 20s that'll do that on every single play.
Well, and those are important. That's not, you know, what you're talking about there is not as valuable as a true fast break is. It's one of the most valuable thing that can happen in basketball. Is you get a true fast break, your points per possession go through the roof. But semi-transition play, where even if you get the advantage of emergency defense from your opponent and they're cross-matched, you can then get advantageous matchups on the floor without actually having to go run a screen and roll or anything like that, just by pushing the ball up the floor quickly. And I do expect to see more of that. Luka, we know, loves the hit ahead pass. So I wonder how much of the fast break that we see is throwing those long passes, as long as they can keep them accurate, those touchdown level passes. Can we see some of that kind of stuff happening from the Lakers? We certainly saw it a bit last year, but I am curious to see, because the Lakers, where they were truly elite, was as a half-court offense last season. But now they've got more legs that I think can get out and run. So I'm really curious to see how the pace ultimately falls here for this Lakers team. If they're able to get out and run a bit more often, I'd be more confident if LeBron was still on the team, because he's such an engine in that regard. But I still think this is a team that's better situated to run than last year's team was.
Yeah.
And let's check this one out. Said, every T-Lane stream on all of his 67 channels starts right on time every time. Punctual king. Now, the sarcasm is dripping from this, because that is absolutely untrue. First of all, it's not 67 channels. It is 57. But punctuality, no, usually not. Usually we are fashionably late. Like, not super late, but a minute or two. Sometimes, you know,
I think, did we move the time to 11:05 technically? Or was that temporarily? No, yeah,
I think
just to give us a buffer.
Just to make us technically on time. I'll tell you what, anytime if it is 11:01, then yes, we move the time to 11:05. Yeah. anytime we need it, it's there.
We start early.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into a few more of the questions and comments coming in. First, a quick shout out from our sponsor, and that is SeatGeek.
So I'm moving to Florida in a few weeks. And a couple of weeks after that, it's my girlfriend's birthday. She loves live music, so I want to take her to a concert, but I've never been to any of the venues out there. Which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout-out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. Major League Baseball is in full swing, and you can now get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. SeatGeek has a great feature that rates these tickets on a scale of 1 to 10, with the green meaning that it's a better deal, and the red meaning that it's a worse one. This helps me out a ton looking for the best tickets at venues I've never been to before. Plus, every ticket is backed by the buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with the promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure to click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you to SeatGeek.
All right. Again, a big shout out to SeatGeek for sponsoring the show. We'll get into a couple more questions here. I don't know why we are going after a power forward. Backup center is more crucial. Mamu and Looney are both undersized. Should have kept Jackson. So I completely disagree. I think the priority needs to be the starting level wing rather than a reserve five, even though I think both are in need. But I think the priority is the starting level wing, in part because I think it doesn't completely solve your reserve five issue. But if you've got that other player that could start, whether we want to call it the three or the four,
right?
Luka can take whichever spot the other guy's not in, right? But ideally, that should free up even more minutes for Mamu at the five because you've got more depth at the 3-4 spot, and then that allows him to solve part of your problem in terms of your reserve big man. So I don't agree that they need to focus on the backup center spot. I think it is a need. Just to me, the squeakier wheel is the starting level wing. Where are you guys at on that? Jovan, what do you think? Should they put more focus on the big man position or the wing right now?
Definitely the wing. I don't even think it's close, to be honest, just because I think at best this group has four starting level players right now. I think they're missing a fifth starting level player. And some of the guys we're talking about in the form of Zaire Williams and Matisse Thybul are minimum guys, and they're minimum guys for a reason. And so, like, doesn't mean they can't outperform that, but the gap to go from outperforming a minimum contract to performing at like a starting level spot, it's a pretty big gap. And so I understand that there's, like, I'm not saying not to be optimistic about some of those guys, especially Zaire. I think there's some untapped potential there. I'm just saying Zaire going from like what he's been up to this point in his career to being like a clear cut no brainer starter against the likes of OKC and San Antonio, like that's, there's a pretty big gap there. So I think I keep pushing back on this, but like, it doesn't have to be a power forward.
Right.
If anything, I think it's more of a wing. If anything, it's more of a three because Luka, if you tell me I can only play Luka at one defensive position, I'm playing Luka at the four. So if anything, it's actually more of a three than a four. Now, technically I would like someone who could do both of you're playing the Celtics. All right. That guy's on Tatum. You're playing the Raptors. That guy's on Kawhi. You're playing the Magic. That guy's on Paolo. Like you're playing even the Nets, right? The lowly team, but like that guy's on Julius Randle. Like that, you need that type of defensive versatility from this spot. And that's where some of the guys are just too small that people will throw out, or some of the guys don't have the versatility to guard both spots. And so for me, this is much more of a wing or just like a true forward than a power forward. And that player ideally needs to be able to defend threes and fours, if not like 2-4 or even 1-4. And that's where most of the names people throw out, I don't think check those boxes. Mm-hmm. Kuminga and Washington do. Washington proven, Kuminga more, I think in theory, but I think it's more of a wing than a power forward. And like, they just need more talent right now toward the top end. Like the middle class of the roster, I think does need, you know, a boost still.
Yeah, I strongly agree with this. And I also think that's where the available talent is right now. Like, I would love for us to be able to go to the backup five store and get a really good backup five. But like, who is that? Who would that be? Like, we've brought up Diabate as sort of a pipe dream type of thing, yeah. But I don't think that's happening. And if it's not him, Gafford makes $17 million. Like, that's probably too expensive for the backup. Like, he'd be very good in that spot, of course, but like from a roster allocation standpoint, Trev, I don't think we could afford that. So if you look at the actual players available right now, there are a lot of forwards relative to that backup five spot. So sometimes you got to address the need of the players that are actually there on the market.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And right now, you know, like Nick Richards is out there. Does he really affect winning to a high level? Could you get him on a minimum? So that's what you're kind of looking at for a backup. I wouldn't mind getting another player that can be that backup five. But to your point, the available players on the trade market right now appear to be wings. And that's actually a good thing for the Lakers. So if you can get that wing players, but if it's a Kuminga, if it's a PJ Washington, you know, the guy I keep thinking of when Jovan's describing what it is the Lakers need, it's like, it's Andrew Wiggins, right? That's basically the role that you're looking to fill, somebody that can do those types of things for you. And maybe that can be Jonathan Kuminga. We have a bit more of a sense of what PJ Washington is. Can he do those things for them? I think he can, but it's a matter of doing what you can do with the assets that you have available and then making sure that you take care of what's the biggest emergency. And that's right now the wing position for them. Luka does have that versatility to defend either of those two positions, but you ideally just want him on whichever player is weaker, whether it's the three or the four. I agree. People get locked into, well, they need a power forward, and that isn't really the case. But people also get locked into Luka is a point guard. Offensively, he's an initiator, but defensively, that's not what he is. So we have to make sure we slot Luka properly in all of this too. And that's still, I've seen an issue out there in Lakers fandom. As far as the last comment here, should have kept Jackson Hayes. Jackson got $6 million. The Lakers didn't have that. I would love to see Jackson Hayes would be a great fit. Would love to have him on this roster. Unfortunately, they ran out of money in order to keep him. They could have given him a bit of a raise if they had decided to pay him using his bird rights. But ultimately, they just weren't in a position to give him the kind of money that he wanted to get. I believe they relinquished his rights in order to have the cap space to sign some of the other guys that they did. So keeping him would have meant no Colin Sexton, would have meant no Quentin Grimes. One of those players would not be on the roster if they kept him. So the Lakers clearly preferred going with the new pieces that they got. If they could have got Jackson back on a minimum, he certainly would be a problem solver to a degree as a reserve big, but just wasn't in the cards for them to be able to keep him, unfortunately, because I do think he has that mind meld with Luka, and a lob threat was certainly something the Lakers could use, but regrettable that they weren't able to keep him. It is a little bit funny though, guys, that he wound up in Utah. Utah, a lot of teams really stacking up bigs. So Utah said, fine, you're going to take our guy. We're going to take yours. We'll take Jackson Hayes.
Yes, sir. Trevor, I wanted to address something that you brought up a moment ago about Luka being an offensive one, but a, you know, defensive four type of thing. I think basketball is the only one of the major sports where there isn't a clear delineation between the position that you play on offense versus defense, right? Like in baseball, sure. I know what a shortstop is. I know if somebody hits seventh in the order, they're not as good of a hitter as they are if they're first or second type of thing, right? Or in football, we know exactly what a defensive tackle plays versus an off, like it, but there's clear delineations. You do the same with soccer and hockey and all that. We don't really have that in the NBA. And that's one of the things that I'm hoping for in the next 5 to 10 years of coverage is that we can sort of like get clearer of language, because even when we talk about these type of things where it's like, what does it mean to be a three? What does it mean to be a four? I could ask you two guys and all three of us could have three different answers. We could ask the listeners, they could add another dozen different options to that. And I would just love for there to be clearer, like more defined language around the NBA, because I think it's confusing for the fans.
Absolutely. Think it is. We are seeing, especially with players that play different positions on offense and defense, it is very confusing, and people get, it's confusing to the point where people think you're making a mistake, right? I've seen it a lot. When I slot Luka as a three or Luka as a four, people go, oh, what? But he's not. No, he's a point guard. Right? Yeah. That's what we've heard. It's one of the intricacies of the game that I think sometimes gets lost.
Yeah.
All right. Let's check this out. Why can't we just see this group, what this group can do, trying to fix this roster in 3 months, see who pops and who doesn't, and then go from there? Guys, I wholeheartedly disagree with this. The idea of let's just see what they are. Because here's the difference. If you had, conceptually, on paper, a team right now that didn't have any major holes, that maybe you would want to make some tweaks or whatever, but was pretty much set. Okay, there's an argument to go into the season, see what you've got, figure things out. There's a glaring hole on this roster at the starting wing spot. So it's not like, well, we don't really know if there's a hole there or not. No, it's obvious that there is. Take care of the obvious stuff before you go into the season. I don't want another season of, well, maybe we'll fix this by the trade deadline if we can find the right deal. Go into the season with a roster that on paper makes sense and is complete. Right now, the roster is incomplete. And that's why I'm not for at all going into the season with the roster as presently constructed.
I totally agree with Trevor. I think this is more so for me a bench situation. Like if the backup five was the only thing on the roster, the Lakers land the Washington, they land the Kuminga. even then you have some uncertainty, I think more so on the Kuminga side. But like, if it's like, hey, we're not sure how Mamu and Looney and Vando slash would do as like a small ball option, what's that going to look like? Okay, go into the season, see what that looks like. And then if it's a real concern, if those guys, if those lineups are getting killed defensively or you know, just not performing well, okay, then you know going into the deadline, this is the need we need to address. The issue is I just think to Trevor's point, like there's a glaring need that it's almost like, you know, if you're driving a car and you're missing a wheel or you're missing a steering wheel, it's like you don't just say, well, let me keep going on the trip and then try to figure this out, you know, down the road. It's like, no, you have a major flaw that is not there. And I just think at this point, the Lakers are trying to, again, I think the guys we talk about for the fifth starter, the real answer is none of them. The real answer is they're all bench players and they need to go get that starter.
Amen to that. Although I was nodding my head along to this question because there are so many new players on this team, Trev, that's part of the reason why I want them to hold on to some draft capital, is that we need to get answers to what they are first. Even after they say they get Kuminga, even after that, there is a certain amount of like, all right, let's see what we got, because they need to be at least on the road toward competing for titles. And then, okay, well, we need to address this spot or we need to address there. There's some of that that's just going to naturally come up whenever you add, what is it, 9-10 new players to this team, that I don't want to give everything away over the course of this summer, then get answers and be like, ah, crap, I wish we had some draft capital that we could still attach to something, but we can't. And now we've got these needs that we didn't know that we were going to have in the summer.
You don't go to the beach and say, well, let me wait and see if I need sunscreen. by then you're already burned. All right. Would you guys have traded Austin for Io and Naz Reid? Would have solved a lot of speed and athleticism issues. So would have had to have been a sign and trade, I guess, with Io Dosunmu, Naz Reid leaving Minnesota. Would went out in that LaMelo Ball deal. I like both of these guys. I don't see this as a move the Lakers would make. They've been pretty steadfast in wanting, if they're going to trade Austin, they need to get a player better than Austin. And I think Austin is better than both of these guys.
Agreed.
I wouldn't do this. Jovan, I'm assuming you're a no as well.
Yeah. I just think now your second best player is Walker Kessler.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a big believer in talent. And I think you need multiple top 50 players. And you could argue this version of the Lakers roster only has one, depending. I mean, I think Kessler will be a top 50 player, but he has not been a top 50 player up to this point in his career. So I mean, clearly the Lakers are making a big bet on him jumping into that. But even then, if he's like the 41st best player and Luka is wherever you have him in your top three or four, I just don't think that is winning a championship. Like, I think you need another guy in that conversation. And that's where I think it's like, I get the depth appeal going from Austin to Io and Naz, but then where are you finding this other all-star level talent to be the running mate with Luka? Like, you know, you don't have the draft capital to go get that guy. And so, yeah, I just think that would be a mistake.
Yeah. As skeptical as I am of Austin as the number two on a title team, I think that if he ends up getting moved it down the line, it would end up being for like a wing or like a more two-way athlete type of player that neither Io or Naz defensively address enough to, and Naz is straight up a weakness on that end of the floor, and Io is okay, but like if we're going to move Austin, I would want it to be for like a real top level two-way talent.
And one other thing I've consistently said through the years with my understanding of how the Lakers view Austin is, if they move Austin, it is going to be for an upgrade, not going to be splitting him into multiple players. Right. So I think it would be Austin plus draft capital to go get a better player, not Austin for two or three pieces. So that's my read on that. Like, I think they would use him as a tool to upgrade the roster from a talent perspective, not from a depth perspective.
Yep, 100%. And look, I love both these players. I love Io Dosunmu. I love Naz Reid. Lakers aren't doing that. They're only upgrading from Austin Reaves. They're not going to split him up. What do we think of a lineup of Austin Reaves, Matisse Thybulle, Luka, Vando, and Kessler? I worry a little bit when we talk about drive and kick ability. One of the weaknesses of Matisse Thybulle's game is turnovers. He does turn the ball over at a fairly high rate. So when I look at this and we think about the Lakers putting together all these pieces that could put a team in the blender through this constant drive and kick activity with guys like Quentin Grimes, what he can do, Sandro Mamukelashvili, what he can do, I think you do have some, while defensively there's some interesting things here, you do have some significant weaknesses in terms of the ability to put a team in the blender and keep them there. The ball gets out to Vando. I'm not confident he's going to be able to attack a closeout, or that his closeout is even going to come at all. They're probably just going to stare at him and say, go ahead and take the shot. So I think this would be taking, while there's some defensive upside here, this is taking what the Lakers are, their upside on the offensive end, and it is drastically holding it back. This is an anchor on the Lakers offense. If you were to run a lineup like this out there, there's a world where it could work. You're forcing a lot of turnovers. Just that's a pretty significant trade-off based upon how this roster's been constructed. You're giving up what I expect to be this team's superpower.
Yeah, I think even for as good of a shooter as Matisse has been the last couple of years, he's been 39% and then 43% on catch and shoot threes. He's still a guy that teams will help off of because he pretty much only takes wide open threes. He's not someone that's even going to really take semi-contested threes, mm-hmm. let alone contested threes. So I just think that the spacing with this group offensively is you just load up the paint and you load up against Austin and Luka and you like let Matisse and Vando shoot as much as they want, or you can close out to them and that will cut off their shot. And then they're not gonna be able to make you pay off the dribble with their dribble drive game. So yeah, I noticed he said lineup. He didn't say starting lineup. I assume he means starting lineup, but like, sure, you could throw this out in the course of a game and just kind of see what that looks like. But in terms of starting, I think you need to put a certain amount of shooting around Austin and Luka to really unlock that pick and roll game.
I'm with you guys, especially with on the starting lineup point, but I am intrigued by this I feel like Frank Vogel would like this lineup on some level where you've got two really good point of attack defenders at different sizes, right? That can get over screens and force turnovers, funneling into an elite rim protector. That it's like, that was sort of the idea of the 2020 team in a lot of ways. It's like, LeBron, AD, you guys are both awesome. You'll figure it out on offense. Now, you did have that elite shooting in guys like Danny Green, or at least elite's probably overly generous, but Danny Green, KCP, guys like that could space the floor, right? That this doesn't have, but that's a really elite trio defensively that I think the concept behind it is you've got two awesome offensive players, two phenomenal perimeter defenders, and then a really good rim protector. You'll be able to create enough offense with Luka and Austin on the floor. But I'm more with you on that, Trev, of like, you take what this team can be on the offensive end and really mute that by putting multiple guys. And one point that you make, Jovan, all the time is that Redick really doesn't like going beyond one guy on the floor that is sort of a spacing issue. Like, if it's two of them, it's a much different equation.
Yeah, but put Grimes out there with one of those two, and that's a really interesting lineup.
There you go.
Or the thing I thought of was if it's Kuminga instead of Vando. That's where suddenly it gets really interesting, right? And Grimes, same effect.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do last one here. Said, the more time goes on, I think Cam Johnson is the answer. Makes sense for both teams, finally, and basketball wise, guys, I just can't see the Denver Nuggets, if they have any other option, sending a piece the Lakers could use to LA. I think they would send him just about anywhere else. I'm not even convinced though that Cam Johnson is the guy that you want to slot next to Luka. Jovan, where are you at on Cam Johnson? If let's say Denver called up and said, we want to do a trade, we want to send you Cam Johnson, we're trying to clear salary, maybe a third team gets involved to dump salary around. Do you feel like if they got Cam Johnson, they've checked the box in terms of that open wing spot?
Yes and no. So he is not good enough defensively for what I would ideally want from that position. And I also view him as a short-term solution. But I guess this is along the lines of the argument I think we all have made to varying degrees in terms of prioritizing like a Marcus Smart or a Kelly Oubre over Colin Sexton, where we knew that was a short-term band-aid. It was a short-term solution in terms of like, this is the bridge, this is the stopgap to the eventual either that player becoming a bench player or you finding that starting piece to replace them. So Cam Johnson could be something like that. And I would argue he's a better player overall than Kelly Oubre or Marcus Smart, even if those guys are better defensively than him. So I think in like a one-year context, or maybe this next summer, they re-sign him to like a two-year deal or something. Sure, for 2 or 3 years, he could be a plug-and-play guy for them. I just think ultimately, for the caliber of defender you need around Luka and Austin at that other, like, you know, you have Grimes in one spot. Well, the other player ideally is better than Grimes, honestly, but needs to at least be in like the ballpark of Grimes. And I just don't think Johnson is in the same ballpark. So I guess for a 1 year rental, I would take it over the current roster.
Sure.
And then maybe you figure it out next summer with the non-taxpayer MLE. But yeah, I mean, I guess I would do it. It just, I don't think he's the long-term solution.
And that is why I would want that deal to be on kind of favorable terms for the Lakers and have it be a, well, we're saving you all this money in luxury tax. But to your point, Trevor, the Lakers aren't the only team that can provide Denver with that, and that they would be pretty reticent to send him to the Lakers. So I brought up the Johnson idea a couple of times, but I ultimately land where you do, Trev, of like, that's probably the last place that Denver would want to send him. And what you're saying, Jovan, of like, that is why I wouldn't want to give up everything the Lakers could just for that sort of stopgap solution that like sort of checks the box, but not all the way. It is that stopgap idea.
All right, we'll finish with this. Florida Pete, how long till you get a pet alligator?
You know, we've got this lake right outside that I got this little chihuahua that we've got all these like bushes and stuff around where I'm like, and my girlfriend, she cracks up at me because she's like, I've seen 3 gators in my whole life in Florida. I'm like, you never know, because it's always on the news out here too, right? By the way, the news out here is nuts. Like, it's all like explosions and like Chiron swooping in. And, Florida. Man, all the time, yeah. Once every week or so, you know, she'll send me there's a gator knocking on someone's door out here. I'm like, see. And so, yeah, the gator thing, she laughs at me, but I'm paranoid about the gator thing. No pet gators, man. I'm not messing with any of that.
Yeah. I'd want no part of that. I'm sure your dog wants no part of that, of that as well. We got one coming in right at the buzzer. Would Zion be obtainable years down the line? I mean, he should be available. Who the hell knows?
Obtainable, yes. But is the fit there?
Advisable?
But yeah, available, yes. Advisable? Probably not. Probably not. Okay, guys, let's wrap things up there. Jovan, we're sending you off to vacation. Hope you have a great one. Pete and I are going to hold things down for a few weeks while you are out. Hanging out around Europe. Again, hopefully you have safe travels. I know you're going to have an absolute blast.
Thank you. I'm going to miss you guys. I'm going to miss the chat. I'll be back in early September. So, it's going to be a while, but I'm sure a ton will happen while I'm away, and I will have to emergency hop on here and chat with you guys.
I'm sure our group text will be active and lively as well as everything is happening. And Pete, big congrats on the move to Florida, getting all settled in, and awesome. Glad to have you back on.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. And we're going to once a week going forward, I believe, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And we'll announce like what day we're going to do next week. We'll look at our schedules and all of that. But yeah, once a week we'll probably do that through like mid-September. Then we get mm-hmm. to training camp. We'll go back to twice a week.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Appreciate all of you for joining. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Till next time. See ya and stay safe.